Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Time now for our weekly visit with the one and only Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports, and a man that used to sit right here in this chair to my left. He is presented by Audi Flatirons. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
I used to sit in that chair until I was walked out by security that one day.
Oh, do tell.
No. That's
Mark, that's banned.
That's banned.
Oh, okay.
Or not banned? That is the question. Oh, boy.
Look at Mike Sweat.
I'm squirming right now. Oh, my goodness, my goodness. Hey, you've always been a Big 12 guy through your playing days. You've covered a lot of Big 12 football over the years. So did you know this would happen with Patrick Mahomes? What did you think of him when you were watching him play at Texas Tech?
Well, yeah, I had a few games of his, and I got to tell you, that was the most backyard football I'd ever seen played. I mean, they did not have a great defense, and so it was on him. And I remember talking with, he played for Cliff, and so I remember talking with Cliff one day. We were doing a Texas Tech game, and I was just like, you know, what are your coaching points to Patrick? And he looked at me, and he was like, he goes, I tell him to stay alive as long as he can and throw it wherever he wants. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And then we started getting into the whole conversation of, you know, why and all this stuff. And he said it was because of the unique talent that he was. And that's when I first started to think to myself, hey, maybe this guy is not just a Texas Tech product. You know, I look at the arm strength. I look at his ability to make these crazy throws. And the talent was certainly immense. He understands. He's a very mature kid. I loved meeting with him, all this stuff. And I thought to myself, you know, someone's going to fall in love with him. And I didn't know how high he would get selected. But then another quick story about his entry into the NFL is I thought it was interesting. That draft was in Philadelphia, if you remember. And it was a great environment, obviously. But I was there covering the draft. And for whatever reason, and this very rarely happens, but Fox had put us up at a hotel, and it was the same hotel that all the ESPN people were at. And so there was a lot of, like, breakfasts that we all shared together and everything. And it was kind of a cool experience because I don't get to see those people a lot. But one of them was John Gruden. And Gruden was still working for ESPN. He was doing the draft at the time. And we kind of struck up this little friendship. And so we're having breakfast, and, you know, I'm walking by one day, and he's like, hey, Pat, sit down, man. Sit down. And so I sit down, and we started, and the first thing he says, hey, what do you think about Mahomes? And I told him all of this stuff. I said, listen, he's one of the most talented players I had ever covered in the Big 12. And he kind of asked me the same type of question you did. And he said to me, he said, you know, he's like, all of my guys. And then he kind of looks at me with one eyebrow raised, and he goes, you know, Holmgren guys. He goes, all my guys, they love him. They see Favre when they turn on the tape. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I had never put that together. But sure enough, right then he tells me, he's like, one of my guys is going to take him way higher than you think. And that's what Andy did. And so that's the comparison that all of those guys made. And you know what? I know this sounds crazy. It might be even a little better because you don't get the overt recklessness that you got with Favre at some times. He's also probably a little more athletic in terms of improvising outside of the pocket. But I know that's kind of a long roundabout answer to tell you about his process and what I thought coming out of college.
Mark, before you follow up, hold on a second. I've worked with Joel a long time. He's got great talent acting. But that Gruden impersonation wasn't your best. You might want to maybe recover with a little bit of Harry Caray.
I will not be told when to do Harry Caray. I do not just jump when you say, what do you think this is? I can't just come out here. How is this guy behind the back?
And just when I think you're down, you go and redeem yourself. Well done.
I gotta ask you this though, because here's the thing. I guess I was shocked about Joel.
Ask away and we'll move along, Mark. You ask for it once, you gotta get it twice.
All right, here's the thing I was shocked about with Patrick Mahomes, is that all that talent stuff and all the, you know, arm and angles and all the things that we see him and extending the play and second reaction plays and all that stuff is amazing. What surprised me, I guess, going back to last year, is watching him understand defenses, manipulate safeties, and like as a young player, completely have a grasp of the offense. Has that surprised you at all? In his transition from, you know, from college to the professional level?
Not really. You know, when I would evaluate Texas Tech, they weren't running like the pure dyed-in-the-wool air raid offense that Mike Leach ran, which was tended to be a little bit more simplistic as it related to defensive reads. You know, what Cliff ran was a mixture. It was kind of air raid principles. And it was mixed in with a lot of what New England did in the passing game. So Cliff would go up to New England because at one point he was a backup up there, and he would go up there every year and got a lot of his offense actually from New England and then married it to the college game in terms of the air raid principles and the tempo and the college like play fast type of a deal. And so that's what they would do. So Patrick in college was probably way more inclined to be reading the defense than, let's say, a Mike Leach quarterback or like Cliff was in college. So that doesn't surprise me all that much. Cliff is incredibly smart when it comes to teaching quarterbacks, understanding defense, and Patrick certainly understood those things in college. There were just times when if it was broken down, he was told to go play like he was on the sandlot. And I think his ability to do that in college to some degree is what has made him such a success in the National Football League, because he can control a game in the pocket, which I've always argued you got to do. It's like a minimum requirement for a quarterback is to control the game from the pocket. By control the game from the pocket, I mean manipulate the defense from the pocket, understand where they are, where they aren't, how you're attacking them, where you're moving players in order to get and create space on the field. But then he's also got this extra gear, and Mike, I used to talk a lot about this, where he can go above the X's and O's and still hurt you. You know, the above the X's and O's player, I've always struggled with how to define it, and I always thought, like, well, just you play above the X's and O's. Above the X's and O's offensive players, when the defense does everything right, they still make the defense wrong. It's one of the most demoralizing things for a defense, and he certainly has that ability, Mark.
Busy with Joel Klatte, presented by Audi Flatirons. You're a Broncos fan. You follow this team. You're always observing what's going on with them, no matter how busy you are. So what is your overall view of this team now that they've bounced back with two straight wins and they have this opportunity to kickstart their season in a whole different direction with a win over the Chiefs?
I once observed the sun for over an hour. It burned my eyeballs out.
Can't always trust you to step up.
Right.
All right, answer the question.
Say it again. I don't remember.
What's your overall view of the Broncos now that they've won back-to-back?
Well, I don't know if it's changed all that much. I think that they certainly have a defense and have fallen into a rhythm defensively that they're going to have chances to win on most weeks. And then I think it just becomes about two things offensively. Can you avoid critical mistakes? And then when you get the ball in the scoring zone, do you have the ability to score touchdowns rather than kick field goals? So it's a touch alarming last week that the defense played so dominantly, and yet the offense still had to just settle for field goals. I think that's one of the things that will get you beat faster than anything else in the league is when you are dominating a football game and at some point it turns around because it will and you don't have the two possession lead or the three possession lead over your opponent. And when you're still within that possession because you've settled for field goals, you know, you're likely to get beat. So again, those two things, they're playing great defense. And from my seat, if you can avoid turnovers and then score touchdowns when you're in the scoring zone, I think that ultimately will lead to either the success of this season or the demise of this season. When I look at the schedule, Is there a chance to get to 9? Yeah, maybe. I think the defense is going to have to play incredible ball. And then offensively, I don't think that you should think about trying to go out there and do anything that is outside of the box or trying to get into some sort of a shootout or so on and so forth. You've got to do those two things. How do you score when you're in the scoring zone? And then how do you avoid mistakes?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's alarming for me is that you can shut out a team, turn them over 3 times, sack them 7 times, and somehow only come away with 16 points. Like, that should be a 35, even against a good defense, which Tennessee is, that should be 35, 31, 35, 40 points. I mean, there's no question in my mind you should be able to do that. When it comes to a lack of scoring in the red zone, Joel, what is it about this team that you see that concerns you about their inability to score when they get in the red zone?
I think it's their inability to really run the football efficiently in those zones. When you can run the football or you've got a great tight end that can own the middle of the field, I think that that's ultimately your best red zone weapon. I've talked a lot about that. The tight end is just such a weapon in particular in the red zone because those seams in the defense. See, what you don't have in the red zone when you're throwing the football is the ability to move the defenders back, right? So it's very hard to attack the defense laterally in the red zone, which you can in the normal course of play because you don't have that 12th defender, and that 12th defender being the back of the end zone. So as soon as the safeties have that back of the end zone, what they can do is they can play what I would call just heavier technique. They can sit a lot more, okay? So it's much harder to work those what I would call intermediate or layered zones on the football field. So what do you have to do? You've got to attack them vertically through the seams. I'm not talking about down the field. I'm talking about those seam routes where you're trying to get in between players like the safety in the corner or the linebackers and the safety, and you're trying to throw those what I would call between 10 to 12 to 14-yard little seam routes. That's why slot players have so much success in the red zone. That's why tight ends have so much success in the red zone. And that's why I think it's very important for you to at least have the ability to run the football. I don't think Denver does a great job of running the football in the red zone. I don't think that they have that player that they can really count on that can go and attack those seams. Another thing attacking those seams does in the red zone is that it creates and produces true one-on-one matchups outside. So if you've got a guy that can win outside, you can throw a back shoulder fade or a drop out of the pylon or something along those lines. What it does is it presents that true one-on-one scenario where the corner's got literally no help whatsoever. And I don't think Denver's great in any of those scenarios. I wouldn't say that they've got a wide receiver that I would say, great, he can win a one-on-one. I don't think they've got a middle-of-the-field player that can own the seams of the defense. And I don't think they've got a run game that can sit there and run even when you've got that 12th defender against heavy safeties in coverage. So those are three areas, Mark, that I would think great red zone teams have that the Broncos just don't really this year.
Visiting with Joel Klatt, top college football analyst for Fox, and now the top analyst for Fox's coverage of the XFL. Congratulations. You're going to be working the games with Kurt Menefee. How and why will this version of the XFL work when the last one didn't? Are you there?
He didn't like that.
Is that a bad question?
It's a all terrible right. question.
We'll get Joel back. No, he's going to be so ESPN and Fox both covering the XFL.
Really? When do those games start?
Oh, Ben, while we're getting Joel back, we can effort.
Bum, bum, bum.
The XFL will be starting in 2020.
Well,
with the 10-week inaugural season beginning in January or February 2020.
Oh, okay. So after the NFL ends, the XFL will begin.
Of course.
Right. Okay, that's reasonable.
So the games will be on Fox. All right, let's bring Joel back. I don't know if you heard that. Congratulations on the XFL gig. What makes you confident that the XFL will work this time around?
Well, I mean, I'm really excited for the XFL. I think that it's got a couple of things working for it. for publicity. One, I think they've got a much better bankroll too, which obviously was a huge deal with AAF. And then also, you know, your games are going to be on network television. Is what I would say. You're not going to be struggling to find it on CBS Sports Network or something like that. You're going to have these games on ESPN and ABC and Fox and FS1. And so I think it's going to be much easier to find. And one thing that we know is that the ratings weren't the problem with the AAF. I mean, people were actually watching that product. I think it was a product of business mismanagement. And I think that there's an appetite for spring football. And I think that this is going to be a league that really attacks that area and tries to do it right. And so I couldn't be more proud to be a part of it, to be kind of on the ground floor. And we're going to have a lot of cool things. Trust me. We're going to be able to hear play calls live. And so I'll be able to explain exactly what people are about to see based on the playing call, draw some things on the screen for you. The access is going to be incredible. For what we've got and what we can bring to the fans at home. So, very cool stuff that's going to happen. And I think it's going to, be something that you guys will all like watching. Listen, there's not enough football. Just period, right? I think we all go into a little state of shock when football's finally over. And now this is going to give us a chance to watch our favorite sport.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great, and I think there'll be a developmental aspect of this league that will be helpful to the NFL, and it's something that many of us who, you know, are former NFL players and people who've covered this league for a long time understand that this league desperately needs kind of a feeder league, if you will, to work on the skill set, especially, you know, when it comes to, you know, quarterbacks and in my mind, offensive linemen. And so this to me is a really good thing, Joel.
Joel, real quick, I want to jump in because our time is limited. There are currently 7 undefeated teams in college football. Who's the best of all of them?
I think Ohio State's the best of all of them. One, they've been the most dominant. They've got the greatest margin of victory in the country at over 230 points. They've also, if you just gave them a point for every win that one of their opponents has of the top teams and undefeated teams, they've got the most of those. So you could say in some sort of pseudo strength of record metric that they've got the strongest strength of record of all of those teams. And they've been dominant on every side of the football. They've got a great defense. I mean, a great defense. And they're really good on the offensive side as well. They lead the Power 5 in rushing. They've got a quarterback that can do it both running and throwing the football. So watch out for Ohio State. They are my midseason pick to win the national championship.
All right. Well, thank you, Harry. Thank you. Appreciate that. Good stuff. Good work.
You bet. You bet. Now I got to go over to Indiana and check out if the Buckeyes are still there. Are they still in Indiana? I don't even know.
See you, Joel. Joel Klatt.
Later.
College football top dog. And now top dog calling the XFL on Fox.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.